Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White is not worried about them at the moment. He's worried about us. Next 2.5 hours of play. He's a Tuesday morning specialist, and he's back again. Good morning, Whitey.
Well, you're the Tuesday morning specialist. You love Tuesdays.
Only 10 o'clock.
I still don't know why that's the case, but anyway.
Stop
we're
every
here
day.
And we're ready to go.
Every day's a great day. Try missing one.
Yeah, that's
says Tommy
right.
Tommy Hafey.
That's exactly right.
Tommy knew. He was all over that sort of stuff.
Yes, there's meant to be a fair bit of precipitation today as well. I've been a little bit caught off guard by this.
Is that affecting the TikToks?
No, 15 mils potentially today. Rain developing and for a windy day, so yeah, that surprised me a little bit.
So the Tic Tacs, how's it going to go?
The Tiff Tuff is looking magnificent.
Right, is it?
It is.
Well, that's good business.
Yeah, 3 weeks in tomorrow. It's gone quickly.
You sure it's going to... Have you checked the root strength and the shear? And
shear's really coming up well, so the numbers are really starting to improve in that area, so I reckon maybe by the end of this week there'll be a cut.
A cut?
Yeah.
Are you sure you should be doing this as a cylinder cut?
No, don't talk about that.
Is there a cylinder action?
There'll be some sort of cut.
Right.
Anyway,
okay.
What? I know we're going to talk to Rob Harris shortly, but what an incredible story that's developing there. And where it goes, I have got no idea. I think Rob will have more of an idea than us, obviously, but that's quite extraordinary.
Seemingly it is. The more you read about it and the more it affects things in domestic leagues over there in Europe, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens here. And the how and why is where I'm sort of stuck. I'm still trying to work out how and why.
Well, the powerful clubs get more powerful and they get more money.
More cash.
And guaranteed cash. Because you don't have to qualify for the Champions League.
But it's not the Champions League. It's the Super League.
That's right.
But so it's its own league.
It's the problem with that game full stop in a lot of ways is that generally speaking, the best teams remain the best teams because they've got more money than the other teams. So there might be variances from year to year where one might drop out and one might go in. And at the moment in the Premier League, you know, West Ham's got the opportunity to potentially get a Champions League spot. And that's what makes that's the charm of it all, is that a team like Leicester or West Ham might be able to jump into a Champions League spot, and it might be a Liverpool that misses out, having been the champions last year in England. That adds the intrigue when you don't have a final series. If it is a situation where there's no qualification and the same teams just play in Europe all the time, there's just less to play for. So it will make the domestic competition a lot more vanilla.
Have you checked out the website?
I have had a little look. It all looks very advanced, doesn't it?
It does look very advanced.
And how they've kept it a secret as long as they have is impressive. Because we've spoken about it on this show, and there has been rumours about it, and there has been suggestions that things have been going on behind the scenes, but nothing would eventuate. There seems to be a hell of a lot of advancements that not a lot of people have known about. There has been talk that a lot of the German powerhouse clubs won't be involved, and Paris Saint-Germain won't be involved. So
FC Porto have
said
no.
There's a few that won't, but there's quite a few big-name clubs that say they're going to be part of it.
I'm keen to find out more about that. And, of course, you're in mourning today. Are you okay?
With Jose?
With Jose. Jose's gone from Tottenham. Sacked. Him and the whole staff. Gonski.
Yeah.
What's happened there? Why's that man? He's the chosen one.
Well, he's the unchosen one now.
How can the chosen one not be the chosen one?
It just hasn't quite worked.
I think they've been
horrendous, but they haven't been as good as they thought they'd be.
But they don't win anything anyway. So
no, they don't.
How is that success?
And that's the thing about it is that this week they play in the League Cup final against Manchester City, and Mourinho's got this record that wherever he goes, he wins a cup of some description. He had a chance to win one on Sunday. And he's not going to be there for it. So the timing was interesting.
I think he's got wind of this Super League situation. And he said, you know what, go and jam it. And they said, well, how about we jam you? And give him the call.
It might be that, but it also might be that they thought this was a good time to sort of make the move now when there's other things being spoken about and they sort of cop less heat for the decision they've made.
Do you know what I'm going to be when I grow up?
A football manager.
A football manager.
What's the payout?
30 million poons for Airman Hazard.
So I think he's fairly relaxed about it all.
So in the last 5 jobs that he's been sacked from, Jose, what about this stat that came through via Sport Bible on Twitter last night? In 2007, Chelsea paid him £18 million to go away. In 2012, Real Madrid paid him £17 million to go away. This is on top of his salary up until those points, of course. In 2015, Chelsea paid him £12.5 million to bugger off. 2019, Manchester United paid him £15 million to say a salad a biscuit. And in 2021, as we well know, Tottenham are paying him 30 million poons to drop off. So, in the last 5 jobs that he's been sacked from, this, I'm not sure this is where AFLW is heading just at the minute, but I think it's where it could go.
Mm-hmm.
He has been given 93.5 million poons to not do a thing. Now, that's the sort of job I'm after.
You know what that is? That's actually quite disgraceful, isn't it?
It's disgusting.
Yeah. When you think of clubs and you think of a game that's battling at times, certainly Tottenham aren't battling for money and Manchester United aren't battling for money, but there are plenty of clubs in the lower divisions that are, that sort of thing can actually happen is quite ridiculous.
It's
and disgraceful.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Is what it is. I saw this come through. I thought, that can't be right. I did a little bit of background checking. And, yep, well, that's right. 93.5 million, basically 100 million poons to not coach anywhere in his last 5 jobs. That's the sort of job that, that's where AFLW need to get to real quick. Real quick. I'm happy to get sacked for that sort of stuff.
Mm.
That'd be good business. Interesting times for Jose and for football. We're going to chat to Rob Harris in a little while. In fact, speaking of interesting times for football, what about the big Bud being out? The big Bud.
Yeah.
We just got him back, and now he's out for 4 or 5 setback.
I must confess, when it happened, I thought, oh, that doesn't look too good. And he sort of tried to shake it off. And, in fact, he did shake it off. He stayed out there and still had a key part to play in the final sort of concluding stages of the match. But, yeah, they're saying 2 to 4. Our buddy's saying 2. Sydney's saying 4. So it's probably closer to 4 than it is to 2. But, yeah, just that momentum that he was starting to get, and clearly the momentum Sydney's got at the moment, that's not good. And Tom Hickey, that's a big out in a lot of ways because he's been good for Sydney in the first 5 weeks.
Glenn Heaney.
Yeah.
There are a couple of key players, key pillars of that team that won't be there for a little while. So that's a blow for your Swans, who you wrote off last week. Now, yesterday you wrote them off, didn't you? It's all over.
No, I didn't say that.
The pause.
No, well, I don't think they're a premiership contender. I don't think they're that. I think clearly with a 4-1 record and wins over Brisbane and Richmond, you've got to suggest that they're a good chance of playing finals. But my point was that because they're such a young team, you lose a game like that off the back of a mediocre performance against Essendon the week before. There was just signs of cracking. That was my point. And they're the sort of games that often can come back to haunt a team that are trying to make a meteoric rise. That you lose a game where you're in complete control of, you're leading for most of the game, you lose it at the death,
yep.
You lose a couple of plays through injury. It's happened before that all of a sudden it can unravel quite quickly. That's all I was saying.
All right, just checking.
What about with Nathan Jones?
Who's coming up for game number 300 this weekend for the D's?
The lack of 300 game players for Melbourne.
Well, yes. There's only 2.
Yeah.
David Neates and Nathan Jones this weekend. But the same can be said for Collingwood.
Well,
I reckon they've got 3 300 gamers.
So 2 of the most famous, traditional, oldest clubs have got 5 300 game players between them. And it's not just the fact that they're old and traditional and all these sorts of things. But over the journey, so many of them have played in finals campaigns.
Yeah.
That there wouldn't be players from Melbourne through the 50s or the amount of times Collingwood's played finals, that there wouldn't be more players that have played 300.
Well, that was the thing that stood out to me when Scott Pendlebury played his 300th game. The fact that they went through they showed all the records, and it's Tony Shaw and Gordon Coventry. And Scott Pendlebury. And Gordy was a while ago.
Yeah.
Sure, obviously, more recent times, finishing mid-90s. But 3 for Collingwood and 2 for Melbourne, the oldest and most traditional clubs. I do get staggered by that, I must admit.
I don't think there's a reason for it. I mean,
well, there clearly is. But
well, there can't be.
It's a consistent reason.
There can't be a reason for it.
There's clearly a reason. It's just a matter of what that is.
No, I know, but like, there are other clubs that haven't had a lot of success that have had quite a few players that have got well over 300 games.
Yes, my word.
So is it about team success versus individual success, or are we reading too much into that? I do think it is quite fascinating.
What we'll do is we'll get the number of 300 gamers for each club. That's what we'll do. We'll put a list together, and we'll come up with that sooner rather than later. So we'll see. But yeah, 3 for Collingwood, 2. And recent phenomenon for the Melbourne Footy Club, which is what surprises me the most. At least Gordy got involved for the Pies back in the old days. But David Neitz and Nathan Jones.
But see, I might be completely wrong here, but my gut feeling is that there's been a lot of 300-game players for St Kilda and the Bulldogs just in the last 25 years. That's just a gut feel thing.
Did Lowy get 300?
Not sure.
There's 91 300-game players in the history of football, according to Frankie Dettori at the back. So we'll try and do a bit of a breakdown, if we can, because it is interesting who gets the most and who's played the least and all that sort of stuff. I am interested now, because I was surprised, a bit like you, that there's only been the 2 at the Demons. Now, the Bombers have had a few through the journey, and they yesterday, along with the Magpies, announced their jumpers for Anzac Day.
Yes.
Could you believe what you were saying?
No, I couldn't.
What the hell is going on? Who's allowing this to happen, this jumper clash?
Well, it's on the screen. I actually did a little bit of investigating about this yesterday to work out how the hell this has happened. Now, the reality is that Essendon in Anzac Day games have worn a very similar jumper to what they're going to wear again on Sunday.
It's basically the same, isn't it?
Well, yeah, except the red sash is red poppies.
But that's been happening for the last
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But the difference here is that Collingwood have gone with a much darker jumper than what they would normally wear. And it actually looks a very good jumper. It
looks a nice jumper.
But
against somebody else.
It's a very, very dark jumper, which is what Essendon's is. But Essendon is the away team in this particular game. So if it was a normal kind of match, Essendon would be forced to wear a alternate strip. But they're not going to.
Well, they should.
Well, they'll
if
wear,
they're the away team, they should be the ones coming up with a compromised jumper.
Well, they'll wear white shorts, but both teams will wear very, very dark jumpers.
What about the red shorts, the 1980s red shorts? Could we get them back for this week?
No, well, that's not going to make any difference because I think...
It might help.
Well, white's going to be significantly different to
well, so is red.
To black. But I don't
there's
know.
White in the Collingwood jumper, so the red would be a standard. I reckon we go back to the 80s red shorts. If we're going to try and get some differentiation between the uniforms and maybe some different socks. But if they're the away team, they're the ones that should be coming up with a different strip if the Magpies have got a new one.
I don't know how it's happened, but I would imagine that Essendon would have been quite surprised at Collingwood's decision to wear such a dark jumper.
Even though it is their home game and they're entitled to
do so. But it's something that's very different to what they've done previously.
Yes, it is. But surely they get to... This is the thing. Like, surely they get together. Surely Gil's got a dude or a dudette at HQ that is in charge of this sort of stuff. Because these are big moments in the calendar. These are the big days in the calendar. Surely someone has a level of relationship with the marketing / apparel people at the football clubs saying, righto. And this isn't last week, by the way. This is in December. What are you going to wear for Anzac Day? Let's have a chat about Anzac Day and your jumpers. Because we don't want to have any sort of clashes, because I know you both wear a lot of black. How do we fix this? Colin, you're the home team. What are you thinking? Oh, we're going to do this stuff with these little rosemary sprigs all the way up. Looks like rosemary to me. All the way up in the three stripes. Oh, that sounds nice. Bombers, what are you thinking? We're going to go what we normally do. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're the away team. The Magpies are doing this with the rosemary sprigs. You need to come up with something else. Surely this has happened. Surely, Adam, this is happening.
Well, evidently not. And so it's part of... Now, I stand to be corrected here, but I believe it's part of Essendon's constitution that they have to wear the red sash.
No, that's
it's
not...
part of their constitution.
Haven't they worn a red jumper before?
No, they've always worn a red sash. So their current alternate strip is a red sash with a sort of a black outline and then the red for the rest of the jumper. And they tried the red sash with grey, but they've always had a red sash. So Essendon could conceivably... Now, but they've never worn it against Collingwood previously. Let's be clear on this. They've never worn the... I don't believe they've worn the red jumper against Collingwood. They've never thought that it's clashed. But Collingwood's never had as much black as they have in this particular jumper. So
this is why we talk.
If it's Essendon and Melbourne... I mean, Essendon don't wear a clash strip against Carlton.
No, but one's navy.
Yeah, but it's still dark versus dark.
It's not navy. But you've got the black and the red as opposed to just...
But then there are other games where there are clashes where they wear a clash strip where they don't have to, but they do anyway.
You know what needs to change? All these stupid bloody constitutions. That's what needs to change.
You don't respect tradition.
I love tradition. Stupid constitutions, on the other hand, need to be altered. If you can't change a jumper for a game because you've got a constitution, it's the whole Collingwood thing and the prison bars at Port Adelaide and all that sort of stuff. It's just stupid. It's petulant stupidity is what it is. That's what it is. It just makes life very difficult. It makes situations that are avoidable somehow unavoidable. All this stuff. And then we get consternation and antagonism, if that's a word, and all that sort of those emotions, and just ruins your week. It's ruined my week, this. It's Tuesday. I'm really annoyed about it. I was so annoyed about it. I don't like to get emotionally invested in too many things. And jumpers seemingly shouldn't be on the top of the list. But you just think, how stupid is this? In the modern era, we go through so much to get things right, to cover off and tick every box and dot every I and cross every T to make sure that we don't make a goose of ourselves. And then we end up with those two bloody jumpers for Anzac Day. I'm like, seriously, what the hell's going on?
But as I said, Essendon's just wearing its normal jumper.
What? I don't care. I actually don't care that Essendon are wearing their normal jumper. They're the away team and Collingwood have got the right to choose a strip. So they can come up with an alternative. But this is the thing. It should be taken out of their hands. It's not Essendon's problem as far as I'm concerned. This is an AFL problem.
Mm.
And somehow we find ourselves in a situation where it's going to be madness on Sunday. Absolute madness.
It's going to be a talking point.
Absolute madness. And we need to get to a break, speaking of madness. Before we do that, Chris is in Ascot Vale. He's giving us a call on the open line, 1-300-652-927. What are your thoughts on the jumper clash, just by the way? Take your calls on that. 0416-90-50-52. Chris, good morning.
I didn't call about that half, but go to charcoal for the Giants.
Yes, how good's that?
Now, what I'm calling about is Aaron Hall concussed. Firstly, there was no free kick down the ground in that second quarter. We're never going to win that game, right? I'm a Roos supporter.
Yep.
But there was no free kick down the ground. The guys got off with concussion, and Mitch Duncan wasn't even fined. If that was Toby Green, mate, there would have been a hue and cry.
Well, any reference to a hue and cry is well deserved around here, just by the way. I must admit, because I can't recall that incident. I watched that game too. And now I don't know what incident it was.
Second quarter, Hall's got it inside the square. He's kicked it. Duncan's come into the force landed in the goal square. He's come into Shepherd, turned his or to smother, and I don't know what he was trying to do, to be honest. Turned his back, concussed him, knocked him out. No free kick down the ground. And, you know, Duncan's not even, like, fined. Right. I was just a bit gobsmacked.
I've just snuck it up on the computer, and once we get through this ad, I'm going to have a look at it and give you some adjudication from my perspective. It does seem to be a long ad, though. Whitey, are you familiar with the incident?
No, I must confess, I saw the game as well and didn't see. So I've got this for you, Chris. This has come through from the AFL match review findings. Contact between Geelong's Mitch Duncan and North Melbourne's Aaron Hall from the second quarter of Sunday's match between Geelong and North Melbourne was assessed. The ball is handballed to player Hall at half forward for North Melbourne, who prepares to kick for goal. Player Duncan, who is positioned in front of Hall, runs quickly towards him and leaps in the air in an attempt to touch or smother the ball while in the air. Duncan turns his body and his momentum carries him into Hall, making high contact with his back. It was deemed by the MRO that the action was not unreasonable in the circumstances.
Okay, now I have just seen it, Chris. Oh, no, I must admit, seeing that now, I reckon that's the perfect situation from the AFL, the way they've adjudicated that. He's going to smother the ball, turn his back to avoid significant contact, I reckon. He's entitled to jump and smother, and he just happens to... I'm surprised he got concussed by that, I must admit. Just happens to get him as he's after he's kicked it. Entitled to smother the ball, it's a legal action. It is a messy situation in the end, but I don't think it's a reportable offence, is my take on that. So I must admit I didn't see that on Sunday night. But I think the AFL and Chris O have got that one right. Hey, Pete Moylan is one of the all-time greats in Australian baseball. He's had a 12-year career in the major leagues, and you know what he's going to do? He's coming home to coach the Melbourne Aces. This is a very exciting announcement for the ABL, and it's great to have him as part of our program this morning. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. How are you?
Mate, we are terrific, and this is very exciting news. I've been sort of around the traps of the ABL for probably a decade now, maybe even 15 years, and the Melbourne Aces hasn't quite caught fire just yet, but I reckon an appointment like this might be a part of that next opportunity for the Melbourne Aces. How excited are you to take up the reins?
Oh, I'm very excited, and that's obviously not why I'm doing it, but I'm very, very excited to take over. You know, it was the opportunity became available when Alan said he was going to step away, and I thought to myself, well, I was a pitching coach there last year. Why not give this manager thing a roll? And I'll have the help of John Deeble, who's obviously well-known around Australian baseball as well, so... Yep. It's not like I'm stepping in completely raw, and I have managed a few teams at the lower levels in Victoria, but I'm really excited at the challenge that lays ahead, and we've obviously won two championships in a row, so the pressure's on.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. I mean, you come into a team that's not exactly on the rise. You're sitting at the top of the tree. Now you've got to keep them there. How big a task is that?
It is. It's massive. Obviously, every other team works extremely hard in the off-season to try and pick the right guys or the right formula to win. So depending on how many teams there are, there could be six or eight teams this year, depending on what sort of COVID restrictions there are. But hopefully, I'm fully vaccinated, lucky enough to live in the States and be fully vaccinated. So hopefully the vaccine gets around Australia and we can have a normal season.
Yeah, well, that'd be nice with the whole vaccination situation. Just on your time with the Aces so far, you mentioned being a pitching coach and been around for 4 or 5 years. I mean, what have you seen from the Aces as an organisation that would suggest that it is one of the premier ones in the ABL?
Well, the two championships on their own, but you know, it wasn't too long ago where the Aces struggled, and with the help of Brett Ralph, the owners, and Justin Huber and Nick Wern and John Deeble, they've just turned the club around, and it's been impressive to watch. I was there as a player 3 years ago, and then as sort of a player coach a couple of times, and then coach full time last year. But it's just the support staff as well, mate. It's not like, you know, there's not a lot of money in Australian baseball, so a lot of the people that are working out there are basically doing it as volunteers or making very little money to do it. So to see the support staff get to sort of revel in our success as well, it's been fantastic.
So, Peter, just on that then, how many hours would you put in a week? And all coaches through the ABL, how many hours are they putting in a week? Are they all full-time? Do some of them have to have other jobs as well?
Players have other jobs. Coaches are sometimes lucky enough not to have other jobs, or they have a job over here in the States throughout the season, so it's kind of their off-season work. A lot of guys over here will go play winter ball anyway, so it's basically year-round. You can find a place to play baseball. But as far as the hours per week, I mean, we play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so you're sort of at the field from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon until late at night, and then we usually have Mondays off, optional training for the players, not so optional for the manager on Tuesdays, full squad training on Wednesdays, and then you're back at it again Thursday. So it's almost every day, but there is a lot of free time as well, so it's not like it's a full-time job, but I love being able to go back to the field every day and be around the guys. I miss that part of playing, so it's nice to get back into it that way.
So I know you're just starting out in your new job, but is your job completely to try and win championships, or is it to create baseballers that will go on and not only represent the country, your country, but go over and play in the Major League Baseball, other overseas type competitions to sort of become a feeder competition? What's your role as coach?
that's the unique balance that you've got to find, is that it's sort of, we have private owners, so as much as the owners want to develop, they also want to win. So I talk a lot about, well, there's a superstar over here by the name of Ronald Acuña Jr. He came out and played in Australia for the Aces about 4 years ago. And that part of his development, he said, is crucial. And he says it himself, because as a minor league baseball player, you're basically, you're not trying to win. You're just there, basically, as you said, as a feeder system. So as much as you are playing other teams and you are in competition, it's not like you're really going out there and fighting for the name across the front of the jersey. Whereas once you get to the big leagues, you want to try and win. That's what it's all about. That's the only reason you're there, is to win. So it's a good balance where we've got right now, is we get these prospects to come over and learn how to play a winning style of baseball, but also develop some of the younger guys that are around Victoria and get them around the professionals that are these minor league and big league guys that they wouldn't normally get a chance to be around.
We head down to Casey Fields and tap into the genius that is Max Gawn, the captain of the D's, after their 50-point win over the Hawks on the weekend. Maxie, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Morning, Whitey, if you're there somewhere.
Yep, I'm here. I'm here.
Now, last time we had you down the line, Maxie, you were cutting laps. You were walking laps down there at Casey Fields. So where do we find you this morning?
This time in the 50-seat grandstand. it's actually a beautiful morning down at Casey Fields this morning.
Is it a ticketed event? Did you have to scan your code when you got in there?
No, I didn't. The fun thing about the grandstand at Casey Fields is it's quite old, but they've got new interchange benches. But the interchange benches are that high that the grandstand is now null and void. You can't see the ground.
Sounds like a nice place to watch the footy. Hey, your world is just getting better and better and better. And I don't want to embarrass you or think you have to respond appropriately, but you're the hottest player in footy at the moment. What's going on, Maxie? How have you got to this point? Is this a reflection on you or your team?
I suppose there'd be a few Western Bulldogs players as well that would be quite hot in terms of individual acts, but also team efforts. And Sydney and Port Adelaide are playing some good footy as well. So there's players amongst the competition that when you're in that top echelon, I've learned that word, echelon. I said echelon last time.
Very funny it was.
I now know it's echelon, apparently. there's Christian Petracca and Clayton Oliver from our team, and then there's Josh Dunkley and Adam Treloar and Jackson McRae and Marcus Bontempelli, and then the Port Adelaide guys that are going well, and Charlie Dixon, Alir. So I suppose that comes with winning form and teams that are playing well.
Have you ever had so much of the footy, though? I mean, you're not just getting tap outs and taking marks and causing havoc for opposition teams in the back half. I mean, you're getting possession numbers that I can't recall you ever getting. Is that because you're more mobile, it's because of the way you're moving the footy, or am I just overreading this?
I am getting a little bit more than what I normally would, I'd say. I've broken 30 once, so I'll see if I can get there again in some.
How many did you get that day? I'm interested. I know the answer to this. Can you remember who it was against and what it was?
I think I might have had 32 against B. Grundy, didn't I?
34 against...
34?
Yeah, jeez. 34. 21 and 13. Oh, round boy. 12, 2019. So that was Queen's birthday. Big game.
That was a big game. I do remember that. We lost, though, which was unfortunate.
Yeah. So you had 26. Maybe. Sorry, Max, you had 26 on Sunday, which is your equal second most.
Yeah, I had a feeling I might have had 26 before, but I normally am in that 15 to 20 mark, and that's where I tend to have most of my involvement, marking a few down back and trying to mark a few up forward, but I was able to get involved in some clearances and some chains as well. So the main part about my game that I value is helping out in the air, both forward, back and around the ground, if that's ruck work or marking. That's the main thing that I put in my game, and the other stuff is just an added bonus if I can get involved.
Well, you're averaging 7 marks a game this year as well. So you are impacting, and you're kicking big long goals too, Maxie. I saw the little sneaky grin you gave when you kicked that long one.
I've got no idea from inside 30 at the moment. I had a really, really good pre-season with goal kicking. I'd sort of cut it back and just focused on my routine. I wasn't having too many shots like I was in the last few years, and I hadn't hooked one. And then come season. I've hooked about three so far, so I've got to... Maybe it might be people watching. I might have to get a few people watching me at training.
You might need to, just to give you that, that experience. Tell us about the game on the weekend, because the Hawks came out firing a bit, and at halftime it's basically even Stevens. You're down by 2 points. What was the message at halftime? Because you were going to that game as raging favourites. We know the Hawks are always a little bit more difficult to play against than perhaps some teams, but I mean, you should have won that game. You ended up winning it by 50 points. What did Simon Goodwin say at halftime?
The Hawks, we knew that was going to be a good game. They came close to Geelong. They went to Freo and came close to them. So they've had some a reasonably tough draw and some good form to be 1-3. And the first quarter and second quarter, Hawks just probably outplayed us a little bit. And we were a bit messy in front of goal when our inside 50 connection probably wasn't there. And they were beating us out of the centre as well. So that's something we sort of focused on at half time. But we knew that we'd had enough ball and enough stuff go our way to be probably in front in that game. So we just said we'll keep going at it and don't really change too much. We're just trying to be a little bit cleaner around the ball. And Hawks came out and did probably better than us in the third quarter as well. They weren't playing their normal way. They're normally a high possession team and a high uncontested mark team, or they have been in the first 5 weeks. So that gave us a bit of positivity around the fact that we're making them play a different way as well. But then that fourth quarter, we're able to sort of release the shackles and play some good footy.
We're five games in now and you're five wins, so you're going really well. Can you sort of put a couple of examples of why it feels different? You've spoken a lot about the team maturing, and Simon Goodwin has as well, but even just out there playing, what feels different?
Just responding to challenges. There's so many challenges and so many momentum switches within a game that to be able to respond to them quickly and the way we want is something that's probably been quite prevalent in the first 5 weeks. There's obviously a long way to go. And we've got some big games coming up. But to every game, we've been challenged. And, for example, the Hawthorn one, they kicked a goal in the first 10 seconds of the fourth quarter, which seems to be a trend of us. We don't like kicking the first in the fourth quarter. But then to be able to come back and kick 7 or 8 goals from then on. Again, I don't like using the word maturity too much, but it does show a sign of maturity. And it also shows a sign of respect to the game plan, respect to and trust to the rest of the playing group.
The obvious comparisons are going to start to be made now about the team that got through to the preliminary final a couple of years ago. And I know Nathan was asked about it yesterday as well. Do you see comparisons between those, or is this a different feel this time around? What are you sort of sensing?
It's probably different in terms of the way we're both winning games and how the season's sort of folding out. I think 2018, we just had a really, really well-timed run with a young group and capitalised on a bit of momentum that lasted about 6 or 7 weeks at the end of the season in the first two finals. And I think I'd heard Nathan say this, but I think we got smashed by Hawthorn in the middle of the year. I think we got smashed by Richmond at some point in the middle of the year. So we were still losing quite heavily in 2018, and we just timed our run really well. Where this year, it does seem to be we're able to respond during games that we potentially might have lost in that season. So, albeit it's a small sample size, it's only five weeks, and we've got an incredibly big challenge over the next 2 or 3 weeks. But it does feel slightly different and slightly more older and mature group. Most of the guys that played in that team are still in this team now as well.
What's it like? So it's happened against the Giants and then again on the weekend where you get on a roll in that last quarter and you nail it. I mean, it was breathtaking football that last 20 minutes or so on Sunday. You're almost like the conductor of the orchestra. You're leading it all off. You're the captain. You're out there. You're starting it off in the centre bouts, just watching it all unfold. The fans in the MCC members all getting involved. What's that feeling like at the moment?
I still don't think the Melbourne fans can really sort of, be happy until red time and we're 8 goals up. They get a bit nervous, which is probably fair enough of our track record. But it's been good, especially the game on the weekend. It felt like we had a lot of chances to be able to put a score on the scoreboard, and we were either obviously missing set shots like myself and Cozzy Pickett and Christian Petracca missed a few shots, and And then some inside 50 connection stuff with Tom McDonald was running into an open goal and decided to switch it across goal. And there was a lot of stuff to be able to get us a lead or a score on the board. So the most pleasing thing was that was just able to turn in the last quarter. And Jake Melsham kicked two straight. I think Mitch Brown kicked two straight. I was able to go back and kick one. I think Christian Petracca kicked one. Cozzy Pickett kicked one. So the guys who were missing earlier on in the game were able to kick them. And that's the pleasing thing with the, definitely the Hawthorn game. The GWS game was an interesting one. They completely ran out of soldiers. I think they had three on the bench, and we actually felt like we were running over the top and just running a little bit better than them in that last quarter.
Can I ask you about this forward half game that seemingly has evolved for the D's? There was a graphic in the, or a table in the paper yesterday, which highlighted some of the developments where you've gone from 13th to 1st and 18th to 1st and 14th to 6th and all that sort of stuff. Time in forward half, forward 50 re-entries, forward half pressure, that sort of stuff. Clearly, it's a change in directive and plan or ability to bring it out and play it out. But how do you train that stuff, Max? Is it just get everyone in the one half of the ground and just get the other team, whoever it is, any given time, just to try and get it out? Is that how you train that stuff?
Yeah, the one key thing, there's been a massive factor in the fact we're training out in Casey Fields. It's a really big oval. It's the size of the MCG, and we've been training on Gosh's for 10 years now, which is the smallest oval I've ever trained on.
Yeah.
And it's quite easy to defend at training, the Gosh's paddock oval. So to be able to come out in the big oval, there's just a little plug for Casey. But it's something that hasn't just happened overnight. We've been trying to build a team defense and a forward half game for the last 3 or 4 years. And I think the main thing that you need is trust. You need to be able to trust Jake Lever, Stephen May, Harry Petty, Adam Tomlinson down back. And you need to be able to trust Alex Neil-Bull and Charlie Spargo and Cozzy Pickett to put on some pressure up forward, and then the midfielders to plug the holes. And also, we'd have been a high inside 50 team in recent years, but haven't been able to convert. So you can play forward half footy, but if your inside 50 connection's not great and you're not kicking goals, doesn't really matter anyway.
And that's great for your fans and listeners to hear that the spatial awareness of what's happening around you in those situations is really good, is really important, and need to be familiar with that. Because if you're defending a really small area like you are at Gosh's, you think you might be doing okay, but you get to the MCG or you get to Optus Stadium in Perth or the Gabba, big wide expanses, and teams all of a sudden are getting past you and you're going, hang on, what the bloody hell's going on here? But you don't understand the space because you're not training on it week in, week out. I reckon that's a great insight. And that's, you reckon, one of the key reasons.
Yeah, definitely. I love training down here. Sometimes you get some bad weather, but apart from that, the oval's massive, and it really has given us some good training for games on the MCG. We've been a poor MCG team the last 2 years. I mean, we've been a poor everywhere team in 2019, but our MCG footy had really depreciated. So to be able to get out here and just feel the right spacing, the right surroundings, and like I said, that trust that everyone's in their right position, so you can stand in front of your player. That's one of the more nervous positions you can be in, is standing in front of your player,
yep.
Especially when there's a bit of momentum on the ball. So it hasn't happened overnight, and we're going to get tested. The easiest months to play footy half is March and April. And April, everyone's still quite fresh and still quite happy, so it's going to get tough. And there's no tougher this week against the reigning premiers in a blockbuster game, which they play really good footy in all their blockbusters. And then we've got Sydney, we've got a trip down to Tassie, so it's a big few weeks for us.
Now, it's perfect leading to ask you about the big game with Richmond. I mean, you obviously play Queen's Birthday Monday, but this is almost as big as it gets for you. And, you know, you're near the top of the table, undefeated against the premiers. This is big.
Yeah, the Queen's Birthday game has a lot of history around it. It was our only blockbuster for a long time. And I remember when I first got drafted, there was a big song and dance around Queen's Birthday. It was the biggest day of our calendar year, and we were a team that didn't play finals too much early on, so it was a massive game for us. But the Anzac Eve game has come up to it pretty quickly. We definitely get probably a bit more of a crowd with the night game and the Anzac theme. And it's great to play in the Anzac Day game, just purely to be able to join in and be in the spirit of the Anzacs. And against Richmond, who have probably been the best blockbuster side for the last 4 or 5 years. They seem to play in blockbusters every single time they play. And It's going to be a really exciting game. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be great to find out where we sit against the reigning premiers.
Do you think you know where you sit, or do you need to play the game? Because you've been playing some really good footy against teams that have been around you over the last couple of years. It doesn't get any bigger than having to take on the premiers, but do you feel you're ready?
I think win or loss, I think we review this game pretty intensely afterwards. So if we lose to Richmond, I reckon we're going to get some great learnings that'll help us go throughout the year. If we win against Richmond, which I'm hoping we do, we're still going to get some great learnings to go on through the year. I don't need any validation on where I think our team's at, but it is good going up against a reigning premier this early in the season.
I'd have to look up the meaning of a misdemeanor, but all I know is that the bloke we're talking about that grabbed the phones had just been omitted from the game for concussion. So you're not thinking straight.
Should someone be there to help him think straight?
We're a little understaffed at the moment, Robbo, after COVID, so most of our people were hands on deck.
I hope you're listening, AFL.
But the main issue there is that, you know, that Geordie, you know, we had a couple of injured players, and the bloke that went and grabbed the phones, he wasn't deemed well enough to continue to play a game of footy because of a knock to the head. So that's pretty, I don't think he was thinking straight.
Nathan Buckley, the coach of the Magpies, last night on AFL 360, you heard the voice of Mark Robinson as well as part of that conversation, talking about the phone gate. The mobile phone game. Wasn't Tommy Two Phone situation with Geordie to go. He's getting a mate's phone as well, just waiting for a mate sort of stuff for Geordie. He was concussed, says Bucks, and that's why he was perhaps not thinking as clearly as he possibly could.
But Jeremy Howe wasn't concussed. So Jeremy could have said to Jordan, mate, I don't think we can have these. We'll perhaps put them back in the box.
Well, maybe he didn't even ask. He didn't know until Geordie just started looking, fishing around for things and saying, do you want your phone? Oh, yeah, all right. Who knows? Anyway, they'll get their little pleas. They've got their pleas explained. They'll deal with that. Johnny Ralph's going to help us through all of that because he is the number one man when it comes to news in this town from the Herald Sun. The Buzz joins us. Morning, Ron. Ron.
Good morning. Ron.
I was going to say Ralphie. Ralphie and John became Ron there.
Ron Burgundy.
Hello, Daniel Harford. It's great to be with you, Adam White. Wash your mouth out with soap. Dustin Martin retiring at 33 years of age. Hey, he's going to go till 40.
No, I said he will get to 350 by 33, which means he has scope to get to 400.
Now, I've done some numbers, Buzz.
Okay.
So, Joel Selwood, right? I don't know if he is officially, but he was really quick to 250. He played his 250th game, the first game of his 12th season. That's a pretty good effort. Pretty good numbers. Dusty is playing his 250th game in the sixth game of his 12th season. So five games behind, but there was only 17 games played last year. So he's officially on par, in my eyes, with Joel Selwood to 250 games.
Yeah, and look, those numbers are fantastic. I mean, the end game for Joel Selwood, he's not parking in a forward pocket and kicking 70 goals a year like Lee Matthews did.
Yep.
You go through his numbers. I think he missed that one game with a sore ribs, one game with a suspension for those shenanigans with Dan Connors up in Sydney, one game when he was rested early on in his career when he didn't want to play. So, look, I always thought that Brett Delidio would get to 400 games. He was something like 240 by the age of 29. And then, bang, he hit the wall with those injuries. And so, you know, things can change, but Dustin Martin, all we can say right now, he's like Travis Boak, who you spoke about yesterday, Whitey. He absolutely feels like he can play late into his 30s. Now, you know, he's never been a great runner. He's an elite forward craft merchant. I mean, to think of my kids coming through as Tigers fans, and I think, well, what happens when Dustin's gone? I mean, long may he play well into his 30s, because he's a star, and he's just a pleasure to watch, and he inspires a lot of kids.
But as you say, Ralphie, the thing with Dustin is that, which I thought would happen with Gary Ablett, is that he could play as a permanent forward and prolong his career quite considerably, rather than Travis, who'll always be a midfielder.
Yeah, and I think that Dusty was probably lucky early on with his injury history, but right now he doesn't leave anything to luck or to chance. You know, all the boxing sessions, all the Pilates stuff. You know, we hear about the fun times with Serena Williams over in the Maldives there, you know, drinking cocktails and playing DJs, but he's so fastidious, according to his manager, Ralph Carr. And that's why, you know, that's why I'm harsh on players like Jordan Ngoi. You know, because it's not just because they're not getting the most out of their careers. It's like, do they want to maximise and prolong their careers? And, you know, I just think that Dustin, for all the reputation, you know, he's probably one of the top 10 trainers in the league. And that's just absolute credit to him because he didn't tend to be early in his career.
What about the Blues, the other team, the other big team in town that, well, it's a great rivalry, Collingwood Carlton, but both are struggling at the moment. What's happening at Icon Park, Ralphie?
Well, Daniel, I don't think every coach should coach in the image of their playing career, because if that was the case, the AFLW women at Carlton, they'd be just what flighty, sort of inside, outside midfielders, big shorts. But look, I've written today about, you know, David Teague. I mean, he was the most courageous player across the competition, and in 2004, where he was voted that the Rob Rose Trophy medalist. I mean, his team just plays like flighty, you know, up and down, let's call it a running race, a cross-country style game of football. He was a dog-hungry, hard player who threw himself back across the body and who was absolutely prepared to commit his body to the line. And I just don't think Carlton plays like that. And look, the stats are pretty stark. 18th in pressure, 17th in tackles. West Coast is 18th, and they obviously play a very different methodology. And look, we all love Sam Doherty. We all love the storyline. We love the fact he's come back from two knees. But four tackles in five games is not enough. You almost have to avoid contact to only have four tackles and five tackles. And I know he's that, you know, clap the hands off the back of the stoppage, give the ball to me, receiver, and then I'll dispose of it beautifully kind of player. But when the chips are in, when you're struggling like Carlton are, he's got to be better than that. If he doesn't tackle, why would Tom Williamson want to tackle? Why would Sam Petrescu-Seaton want to tackle? Yeah, I know that people are criticising Paddy Cripps for almost doing too much, but I just think when the proverbial hits the fan, there are too many of those Carlton leaders and senior players who are not inspiring right now. I mean, we love Mark Murphy. He's not playing like every game. This could be his last game of football, because it could. And I hope they turn it around, not just for one emotional uplift against Brisbane, but for a sustained period, because otherwise they're going nowhere.
Talk about some athletics, because on the weekend the national championships were held in Aths, and Hannah Busick was the Australian 100 metres sprinting champion, and she's been good enough to join us as she's booked her ticket to Tokyo. Hannah, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
It is a pleasure to have you on. I've been following you for a little while now. Scotty Gallen's our athletics man around here, and he told us to keep an eye on you a while ago. So I've been watching you with interest, and your times are coming down into ridiculous margins. On the weekend, 11:23 for the Australian title, which must have been very, very exciting. But you booked your spot to Tokyo. How did that feel?
It honestly feels amazing. Now, I won't... I'm not 100% locked in for Tokyo. I've got half the job done. So auto qualification, I had to run. Well, I have to run 11:15.
Yep.
And get the national title. So I've run 11:18 and 11:19, and I've got the national title. So there's still about five competitions where I've got a chance to run that 11:15. And then obviously it's up to, if I don't run it, then there is every chance that I can still go. It's still up to Athletics Australia, but no, it's been insane the last few days. Like, you know, the national title still hasn't sunk in, to be honest. I'm just on cloud nine.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, your times have... I read your story from Michael Gleeson, The Age, on the weekend as well. You talk about your battle to get past 12 seconds. You broke it years ago and then you couldn't get back there and you weren't overly fair-dinkum with your training, and now you have been since COVID and your world has changed. You're 11:63 in December last year, 11:45 in Feb this year, 11:37, 11:18, 11:23 on the weekend. You're just about there. What's the difference? What's happened?
I know, it's. I'm so close. I know that I will get it in one of those competitions up in Queensland, but I'm a completely different person. I can't explain to you. My life has done a complete 360 over the last 12 months. You know, I was always training and things like that, and I always loved it and had a passion for the sport, but passion wasn't enough and isn't enough. I just wasn't putting in the work. And then COVID happened, and you know, I couldn't do anything else. I was stuck at home, working from home, doing uni and things like that. So I thought, let's give this a crack. And, you know, I was training well. And I know when I'm in form and I know when I'm in shape and when training's going well. And I was like, holy crap, I just need to keep pushing and keep going with this. And, you know, I wasn't drinking and I got my diet in order and, you know, I was getting fitter and fitter and faster and, you know, lifting heavier weights and running faster times and training and things like that. So it was all there. And then, you know, when you're on a roll, you just can't stop, to be honest. So that's what happened.
It's quite amazing, because we've spoken to Rowan Browning a couple of weeks ago. He's running really fast. Yeah. There's others that are in the track and field jumping high.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good things that is happening in track and field at the moment. Are they all similar stories to yours, do you think? Or are you pushing each other? Why is it not just you?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the fact that it is an Olympic year, and I think last year was really disheartening for a lot of athletes. I was sort of the opposite. I was, in a way, as awful as it was last year, I was sort of glad that it happened because it gave me another few months to get some really hard training under my belt. But as I said, I think it just added fuel to the fire for a lot of athletes last year, having that Olympic dream literally stripped away. So I think everybody did the same as me, and we all just, trained super hard during lockdown, and then now it's paying off. And seriously, obviously it's not just sprinting, as you said. People over distance are running incredible times. The 1500 men's was incredible. Nicola McDermott got the Oceania record in high jump on the weekend. Like, there are so many people doing so many things, and it's just so exciting because we're making such a big name for track and field in Australia. It's just, going into Tokyo, it's going to be insane to watch all these people.
Well, the sporting world was rocked yesterday with news of this European Super League announced in the world of football. Rob Harris has been covering it magnificently, AP's sports correspondent. He's been good enough to join us this morning. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. It's floored everyone, this proposal for this Super League. But I must admit, I can't believe the unity in the rest of the world who's not involved, the opposition towards this. How have you seen the last 24 hours?
Well, we've seen fractured divisions across European football, both between clubs and within them. Liverpool tonight drawing 1-1 with Leeds, in a result that really shows why a club like Liverpool and its ownership would want a Super League, because they're outside the Champions League top four places in the Premier League, so jeopardising their chances of getting the richest in UEFA next season. By joining a Super League, they'd be guaranteed of their position year after year, wherever they finish in the Premier League. Although, of course, a threat in the Premier League is that if you join the Super League, you're out. That's your only competition. And tonight, the Liverpool manager, in the last few minutes, saying that he is firmly against the Super League,
Oh, wow.
But he is sticking around to deal with the difficulties now in terms of being a manager of a club where he's diametrically opposed to the position, really, that they're taking in where Liverpool should play, because he is an advocate of the Champions League.
Wow. Okay, well, that's big from Jurgen to come out and say that. I mean, there's been... Jose's lost his job in the last 24 hours at Tottenham. I'm not sure if it's related or not, but there's seemingly interesting timing on that. There's six Premier League teams. I think that's the interesting part of this at the moment, Rob. Six Premier League teams involved in these discussions and this Super League. And the FA came out and said... What have they said in the last 24 hours?
Well, the FA have been part of a joint statement led by UEFA that also is signed off by the national federations and the leagues of Spain and Italy, all with this threat that if you go and join a Super League, then you risk being banned from other competitions if you're a player in one of those teams. That means no European Championship, no World Cup for them. And UEFA is now assessing its legal options. When could it potentially kick out the Super League clubs soon from its existing competitions this season, with three of them in the Champions League semi-finals, two of them in the Europa League semi-finals, and a European Championship just a matter of weeks away? And they're facing down that threat now, the leagues, the rebel clubs from the leagues. And it's even reached Kensington Palace, with Prince William, who is the FA president, speaking out even himself against these plans for a Super League. Now more than ever, we must protect the entire football community, Prince William says, and the values of competition and fairness at his core. He said, I share the concerns of fans about the proposed Super League and the damage it risks causing to the game we love.
So, Robert, one of the things that surprised me probably the most in the last 24 hours is how advanced the planning seems to be. Is this something that you think can be reversed, or are they pushing ahead with it and it's happening?
The distrust is so rife now that it's so hard to see a reconciliation. One could happen with some sort of peace deal, but the distrust will linger. You've got the UEFA president, Alexander Šefčovič, on Monday calling people who were previously close friends snakes and liars, including Andrea Agnelli, the Juventus chairman, who up until Sunday was leading the European Club Association, a body Leicester, and on Friday signed up to a new-look Champions League working within the existing structures. The European Club Association still backs it, the new vision for 2024, but it is now a European Club Association stripped of the 12 clubs who have now gone up alone. And, of course, they're 12 of the most powerful clubs in world football. Juventus, AC Milan, Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United and Manchester City.
Greats in the Australian football community, former champion player and coach, and these days part of our team here on RSN 927. Rodney Eade is back with us on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, Rockets.
Morning, Daniel. Morning, Whitey. How are you going?
We're going very well, thank you. Very well indeed. How is your weekend? Because local footy was back for the mighty Baldwin Tigers.
Yes, mate. Yeah, we played the reigning premiers at their ground and able to sneak over the line by a couple of points. So it was a very... very joyous occasion, Daniel. As you would know, I appreciate having Coach Bourne out at Vermont.
Oh, yes. Not a very nice place. Not a very amenable place.
A friendly and amicable place.
For the visiting coach, I wouldn't have thought.
No, it was a good win, so they did very well.
Well done.
Very
good, well. Good start for the Mighty Tigers. Good luck to them in season 2021. In the world of the AFL, Rocket, what caught your eye? What was the most professional performance across the weekend, do you reckon?
Professional performance to me was Port, yep. Just getting the job done with injuries. Had a couple more, so they just get the job done, like the way they go about it. They're playing really well. I did like the Giants. I know the Lions did well, but it was wet and Essendon didn't turn up. But I like the Giants. I like the new uniforms too. I like the new strip. Yes, very positive, I thought. made them looking bolder and stronger, and they probably should have won by more. I thought that they controlled play, they just couldn't kick straight. So I think they're going to be a lot more nuisance value than people thought a couple of weeks ago.
Are you taken by how good the good teams are at the moment, Rocket, or how poor the teams that have had some expectation have been?
A bit of both. One of the things I thought about a week or two ago, and I might have mentioned it, but now is I think there'll be a lot more blowouts. I think unless the teams who are going to struggle start to tighten up and probably play a defensive game, but it's a turnover game now. It's pressure to me is king. It's not contested ball. It's pressure on the opposition. Create turnovers, and if you can kick the ball, once there's a turnover, you score. And it's teams creating turnover, like Hawthorn create turnover, but then they turn it over themselves, going back the other way, and that gives the opposition. But the Dogs don't. But their pressure dropped away in the third quarter, and that was the main reason that the Suns got back into that game. But for me, it's like, I think the pace setters, Richmond in this area, that their pressure is elite, and they cause turnover, and then they can score. So that worries for me, the bottom teams who either aren't good enough at causing turnover, or B, when they have turnover, just aren't good enough kicking side or actually disposal side to take advantage of it.
So based off that, are there teams you're worried about that they don't have the skill set to be a successful team this year?
Well, there's quite a few. I think it's going to be a bigger disparity than there has, say, last season between the top teams and even the middle teams, the bottom teams. Last year, you're probably down to 12. 13 maybe. I just worry about. Oh well, Carlton to me haven't got both. They don't put pressure on. They don't show enough grit and fight and physicality, and they play a nice game, but their skills aren't good enough to play that nice game. They turn the ball over. I think it's a bit hard on Essendon because it was wet and whatever. But they're still young, so there's quite a few young teams in this competition who are going to be up and down. And they're starting to filter towards the bottom of the ladder. The Swans, to me, I worry now that I think they might start to drop off. I wouldn't be surprised if the Suns beat them on the weekend up there, with their injuries and whatever. Their young players are starting to tire a little bit, and their game plan's been worked out. That John needs now to tweak that a bit. Except that teams are going to man them up quicker from the 0 to 30 metres from where they have the footy. So it's interesting. Melbourne have done well. You asked a question earlier, half about who are professional. I thought the Demons turned it over a bit, but they stuck at it. They persevered and eventually split the Hawks open. So I think those top four, four or five, maybe three or four teams are sort of different to the rest. The eight seems to be settled, but you can't guarantee Adelaide. You can't guarantee Sydney. I can't guarantee Sydney. So I think there's still some movement, but to me that's going to show six, seven, eight probably aren't going to have much say in the final series.
So what do you do if you're Brett Ratton? Pressure's been one of their challenges this year. They've allowed teams to stroll through them a couple of times, a couple of pantsings, and they nearly did happen last week against West Coast. Enormous expectation. I'm not sure if you've been in this situation or not, Rocket, where you've had enormous expectation. Things haven't gone to plan early. How do you manage that situation if you're Rats at the moment, if you've been there?
Yeah, well, you've got to pare it back. And we always say go back to basics. And what that means, keep it simple, is they've got to rediscover the pressure angle as well, and the contest as far as being in it, lay body on body, and make it a bit of a fight. That's a fit which you've got to go back to things that don't take talent. It's got to show your will and your intent. And to me, there's too many players at St Kilda, and you used the phrase before, that they just got sliced through, who don't seem to care on the defence, don't seem to care. They're not running. You can tell they don't work hard enough. And if I was him, he has got to get players in there that want to do that to start with. Now, eventually, some of those players mightn't be good enough, but at least they're going to give you the spirit and the energy that you need. And people say about dropping Brad Hill, we'll go to him, about taking a big name. I wouldn't drop him just because he's a big name. I'd drop him because he's poor. I'd drop him because he's poor form, but worse than that, his intent is terrible. Yep. He is not caring. The way he's playing and his body language and his lack of energy indicates to me that he doesn't care enough. He doesn't care whether he puts pressure on. And they're saying, oh, we've got to give it to him and he's got to... Well, okay, that's fine. But he's got to get in the right spot. He's got to work hard as well. He's not working hard even on the receiving end. So to me, cut him, see if he's genuine, see if he wants to work hard, put someone else who does and get that. You've got to get the baseline in first before you actually start to think about how you're going to move the ball.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.